Good morning, this is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, April 2nd. Those who are bullish on Japan are nuts. Those who are bullish on Europe, ex-Germany perhaps, are also nuts. Those who believe there are inflation issues around the world due to rising food prices may not be nuts, but are totally missing the impact of speculation, which is huge. Those who are bullish on the United States are walking a tightrope. First up, Japan. This country will see another severe earthquake this year. There is something seriously wrong when, since the March 11 record 9.0 disaster, there have been one-third the world's normal level of 5.0 earthquakes for an entire year off or near the east coast of Japan in just 2 weeks. That is from the U.S. Geological Survey data and Bloomberg Businessweek. Obviously, another 7.5 or greater in a different part of the country has the potential to bring this nation to its knees, as if it isn't already. I've been writing of the power grid. In case you doubted my thoughts of last time, there were a slew of pieces this past week addressing this incredibly screwed up issue where the inept, corrupt Japanese government allowed a system where the grids use different frequencies, so sharing is inefficient. This is critical because Japan is faced with rolling blackouts as a result of the damage caused by the March 11 quake, and the power companies can't cope with the demand. And it's only going to get worse this summer when residents and businesses crank up the air conditioning. How the hell do you run a business in that manner? If you're a chip plant, that requires 24-hour predictable power. You can't. Heck, even breweries need constant power. As for the critical auto industry, the car companies in Japan are looking at the feasibility of coordinating their schedules so that, say, Toyota is on for 2 weeks straight at full power, with Honda off, then Honda gets 2 weeks while Toyota is off, etc., rather than being subjected to intermittent daily stoppages. But in terms of the car suppliers and parts, one AP story said the latter are dwindling fast. And of course, that is an increasingly global issue. The impact will be substantial across Asia, the US, and Europe. In March, Japan's PMI Purchasing Managers Index plummeted to 46.4 from 52.9, 50 being the dividing line between growth and contraction, because of the earthquake and tsunami disruptions, and it won't get better for a long spell because Japan is headed into another recession. Only this one will not be as short as most everyone is predicting. And notice I haven't even mentioned Fukushima and the nuclear issue. The problem is going to be with us for months in terms of the critical nature of it, and there are some who say it could be years before it is truly stabilized. One thing we do know, the cleanup will take a generation. There's no telling how much land will be abandoned, left to the crabs that 20 years from now could resemble God knows what, like a cheap Japanese sci-fi film of yore, the plot lines of which are now all too familiar. Here's the thing about Fukushima. It's the uncertainty. It's easy for most of us to sit in the comfort of our homes in the United States or Europe and say there's nothing to worry about. And it's true that the level of radiation Tokyo is receiving these days is actually less than that which occurs naturally on a normal day in Hong Kong. But no way can you just poo-poo the threat outside of the immediate evacuation zone because no one can tell you definitively where this disaster is headed. Here's what we do know. Vast stretches of farmland in the impacted area are off-limits for the rest of our lives, and these farmers must be compensated by basically bankrupt Tokyo Electric. Giant shipping lines are beginning to steer clear of Tokyo Bay, as reported by the New York Times last weekend. Maersk, for one, said it is monitoring radiation in Tokyo hourly to gauge the risk to its cargo and crews. And as discussed further, you have all kinds of knock-on effects as a result of Japan's myriad issues, such as with tourism. I wish I didn't have to comment on the above, but I'm really tired of all the trite drivel that comes across the airwaves. Ditto Europe. I have been consistent since this Euro 17 debt crisis broke almost a year ago. It won't be over for a long, long time, but the only way for anyone who is intellectually honest to give an all clear is if you tell me the region is going to grow at a robust 3-4% for the next few years. But outside of Germany, and no more than two or three others, the Euro economy is in a funk, and it's all about the massive austerity programs that are now beginning to bite. Look at Britain last weekend and the protests that saw 250,000 turn out against the Cameron government's moves that will result in 400,000 public sector job losses over the next 5 years. Disgustingly, anarchists took over what had been a peaceful demonstration and turned it into a violent one. A few more displays like this and goodbye London tourism just in time for the 2012 Olympics. I've been warning, watch April 27, 2 days before the royal wedding. Certainly, London authorities are worried sick about the prospects, and they should be, because the security effort in London has proven over the past few years to be beyond pathetic. There is zero intelligence, for example. So I expect Europe to be roiling this spring, and anyone who thinks this will lead to improving consumer sentiment, even in Germany, needs a shot of truth serum. Yes, I'm upset. Look at my beloved Ireland. I saw this coming year after year with my visits, 18 or so since 1989. It's been a slow-motion train wreck as the Irish people and their banking enablers just didn't have a clue that there are risks to taking on massive amounts of debt and buying homes with no money down amid dreams of an investment that has to rise 10% a year. This week, the new Irish government completed another round of stress tests on the country's financial institutions, and Ireland's total cost to clean up its banking catastrophe is up to $142 billion. The Irish economy itself is only $240 billion. Of course, Ireland should be forcing the bank's senior bondholders, heretofore protected by a 2008 guarantee when the crisis was beginning to explode, to take a significant haircut. But the likes of Germany and France, who control the European Central Bank, refuse to allow that. I've discussed this ad nauseum before, but it bears repeating. If you force the bondholders to accept, say, 70 cents on the dollar as part of any restructuring, then the big banks in Germany, France, and elsewhere would have to write down their exposures, and it's then we'd see what's behind the wizard's curtain, i.e. banks with no actual capital. Obviously, this would then cascade into a crisis of historic proportions, as in one 24-hour period, the entire European continent would be running to their financial institution in a frantic effort to withdraw savings. It would dwarf 2008 by comparison. According to Goldman Sachs, European banks hold $270 billion in Greek, Irish, and Portuguese bonds, with German banks holding $62 billion and French banks $26 billion. And as noted in the New York Times, whereas Ireland's bank assets are 2.5 times the size of its economy, Britain's are 3.5 times the size of theirs. So no, Ireland can't write down the bank debt the government is now virtually totally on the hook for, save one institution that it insists it can make it on its own, Bank of Ireland, which, if it is able to raise more capital, could avoid majority ownership by Dublin. Meanwhile, Portugal, struggling to avoid the fate of Ireland and Greece in a bailout of its own, announced it would hold new elections in May or June, conveniently in between the April 15 and June 15 dates, where the government has to refinance $12.5 billion in debt. Portugal also reported its debt level as a percentage of GDP is 8.6%, far higher than its target. Spain, on the other hand, waiting impatiently behind Portugal on the prospective bailout list, is having a huge problem merging its troubled CAIS, or savings banks, which I have said all along is a bigger issue than people believe, including hedge fund behemoth David Tepper. It's about understanding the true real estate exposures on each other's books, and it's still largely unknowable. In France, President Sarkozy's ruling party was mauled in local elections, with the socialist polling 36% to Sarkozy's 18% and the far-right National Front's 11%. A socialist takeover seems a certainty in 2012, and what will that do to France's own debt and entitlement issues? Just push them further down the road or throw the country into the ditch? And speaking of elections, we come to Germany. True. The unemployment rate for March fell to 7.1%, and the likes of Volkswagen and Bosch, the giant auto parts supplier, are hiring lots of workers to meet soaring demand. This is good, but Germany is taking advantage of Europe's sick children who can't compete, especially when they are being forced by the same Germany to retrench. Germany has huge political problems that over time threaten its own economy. Chancellor Angela Merkel's Christian Democrats suffered another devastating defeat in a state election last weekend. The Christian Democrats may have gotten 39% of the vote, but their partner, the FDP, only received 5%, while the Greens, at 24%, and their partner, the Social Democrats, 23%, won largely on the issue of nuclear power, Merkel having botched it big time in light of the Fukushima disaster. No one in Germany wants to see any more of their tax dollars go to bail out the likes of Ireland and Greece, so Merkel is in a box. The result is weakened leadership, as she flails about trying to appease a majority on each issue. But let's get the heck out of Europe, shall we, and take a steamer back across the pond to America, land of opportunity. Here's my take on the commodity inflation issue that everyone in corporate America is now talking about, including the likes of Walmart, whose CEO this week said U.S. consumers face serious inflation in the months ahead for food, clothing, and everything in between. I've said my piece on inflation. If you're looking at the core rate, there is little, because unless you've been on the International Space Station for the past few years, not really concerning yourself with your pay, you've undoubtedly noticed your paycheck isn't increasing. If you were forced to change jobs, maybe after a 6 to 9 month layoff, chances are in today's America you had to accept a new position at less money. Friday's jobs report for March, while positive in that it showed the economy added 216,000 jobs and the official unemployment rate dipped to 8.8%, a two-year low, also revealed wages have totally flatlined. Plus, as we all know, the unofficial unemployment rate is over 15%. For much of our economy these days, labor still comprises the lion's share of the cost of a product, and it's not rising. But I grant you, food and gasoline is important, and they're taking off. My point has been and remains this is a final spike and will not be everlasting, because sooner than later it is going to slow the economy far more than currently expected, and commodities prices will decline. I'm grading myself using the CRB index, which closed the week at 360. I say it finishes lower on the year, meaning below the 12/31 close of 332.80. Oil, I grant you, is a different story and dependent on the geopolitical situation, but here too you can see the impact of near $4 a gallon gasoline, above that in California. For starters, on Monday we had a reading on February personal consumption, and it was up a better than expected 0.7%. There were folks on the airwaves saying this was great, only they forgot a big part of the increase was because we were paying more at the gas pump. One other note on food, the world, I repeat, is not running out of it. We had a horrible stretch of weather, both floods and droughts of biblical proportions in 2010. This week, California removed its long-standing drought emergency amid near-record, soon-to-be-record, snowpack in the Sierras. I've also been telling you that Australia's critical wheat-growing region's drought issues are now largely a thing of the past. China's drought has been lessened significantly in recent weeks. Russia, I'm not sure, but we'll know shortly. Yes, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's crop report on Thursday spoke of a dismal inventory picture when it comes to soybeans and corn, particularly the latter, where this nation has its head up its butt in terms of ethanol. But the economy is going to slow, especially in the second half. Demand will drop, the harvest picture will improve, and the speculators will get slaughtered, leaving us back in equilibrium by early next year at the latest. That's my take. I may prove to be very wrong on this or any of the preceding, for that matter. But I assume you go to Week in Review for not just a summary of the main news events that any person taking up space on this planet should know, but also for some educated opinion. Lord knows I spend enough time trying to keep up with this changing world. I'm just dragging you along for the ride. You will learn this. On the week, stocks ended up the first quarter with their best gains since 1998-99 as the Dow Jones advanced 6.4%, the S&P 500 5.4%, and NASDAQ 4.8%. For the week, all three tacked on 1.3% to 1.7%. That's all for this week. I have tons of stuff on the Middle East and Libya. Go to stocksnews.com, click on Week in Review. I'll be back with you next Saturday.